It's time again for the Scotty Johnny Podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam. Talking Wisconsin sports, two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what he read on Twitter. With music by Duluth Greats, Cars and Trucks, here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome everyone into the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Thank you again to the lovely Holly Flottam for introducing us, and thank you for Cars and Trucks for allowing us to use their music. Again, this is Scotty Johnny himself here, Jonathan Barnett, speaking to you. A little tired this week. We just welcomed in our brand new family member this week, or at least welcomed her to the outside world. So running a little
congratulations, John.
Thank you. A little Amelia joined us this week, so we're very happy to finally meet her. So
fantastic.
she's already a punk, but we'll deal with it.
Yeah, well, you'll have that. Did drop on you already?
No, not yet. No. Yeah, you would have. Yeah. Anyhow, as you can tell, Aaron Flottam is with us again this week. How are you, Aaron?
Hey, hey, John. I'm doing a-okay. I've gotten more sleep than you. My family was out of town all last week while you were getting sleep. You and Trina were getting sleep deprived. I was doing just fine. Thank you.
Yeah. The best part is that we have the four others. So then, like, I had to go home with the four others, and Trina would stay in the hospital for a couple days. And I was like, I don't know what she's got to wake up every so often with the baby. But I have these four children who do wake up and try to climb into bed with me and stuff. And you could tell she would get exhausted having them there for too long in the hospital too. So
no, I could only imagine.
There was no winning for her. Yeah. Anyhow, you can follow me at jbarn54 on Twitter. You can follow the show at scottyjohnny1. Aaron, where do they find you?
At Cheddar Talk, John, which has not been too much sports talk in the last couple days. It's been more Game of Thrones and making fun of Little Peep. But yeah, you can find me at Cheddar Talk, John.
Perfect. And if you want to send anything to the show, you can check out our webpage at scottyjohnny.com, and you can send emails to us at podcast@scottyjohnny.com. Any questions, comments, concerns, anything that you have, please reach out to us there. We're just going to get right into it. We're going to go fairly hot take on this episode today, but we'll get started with our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
So, Aaron, obviously the first main event, the biggest thing that we have going here for us is the draft was just this last weekend. It was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, while I was in the hospital.
I didn't notice.
There were two TVs in the hospital room, so I got to see that, and then also I had to take the kids to eat and stuff like that. So I got to watch the draft pretty well. Clearly, there were no surprises. It was exactly as you and I called it. I think we talked extensively about Rashawn Gary, extensively or not at all. It was one of those two things. It's a very binary sort of system we had.
I want to say I think I brought him up to Andy. God, I should have re-listened to the show. I do listen to the show to critique, just so you know, John. But I should have listened back right away. I want to say that I asked Andy about Gary, and it was, there's no chance we're going to get him. I think that's what it was.
Okay.
Because he was supposed to go like at 8, I think. So
I don't know. Yeah, this was one of those ones that was kind of... It's one of those ones that's kind of weird. They talk about, like, he's a guy who had crazy measurables, right? Like, he's big. He can move. Obviously, Montez Sweat was a guy we wanted, but that heart issue pushed him way down to the bottom half of that first round, which was a very good draft for them to get him there. But, I mean, it's just like they got Rashawn Gary, who looks like, you know, he's 6'4", 277. And his athleticism is pretty impressive. And you were talking before we got on the show, he gets double teamed and triple teamed a lot. And there's a couple of good videos of it. If you follow, again, Andy Herman, friend of this podcast, Andy Herman. If you follow Ben Fennell, you probably saw some of it. Any of those groups, people like that, you can follow them. You'll get some good video on those sorts of things. And then Darnell Savage at the back half of the first round. Not a name that we were talking
about. Actually, obviously, something was wrong with Sweat because... the Packers had two shots at him, and they didn't take him. So,
yeah, I you knew, at least I felt there was no way they would take him at that pick going in the back half there because they traded up, and I was like, they're not trading up to get a second pass rusher after getting two of them in free agency. I was like, we're definitely going to go line or safety here, right? And they went safety, and they traded up. I mean, they traded themselves out of the fourth round, and this is an interesting way somebody phrased it to me is, we traded a fourth round pick and Clinton Dix to get Darnell Savage. Because the other fourth round pick is the one we sent to Washington, or we got from Washington.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Absolutely.
Savage is an interesting cat. Big Ten player. He's got a ton of speed, and he's 5'11", 198, you know, decent all-around athleticism, I guess. What it looked like, if you look at that first round, the way to think about it is what we are learning, and the way I like thinking about it, I guess, what we are learning about Gutenkunst, our good buddy, Good Art, is that we're learning that what he likes is athletic freaks. For the most part.
Yes.
Like, he's looking for a guy who's like, I can't find this, and we can coach the rest of it.
Right.
And we're hoping that he's got the coaches in place to do that. And what we're hoping is that Darnell Savage and Rashawn Gary are people who fit into the system that Petten's got, and that Petten will find a way to move Gary around. Gary's definitely not going to get double teamed in this defense because they're going to double team Kenny Clark. And if they double anyone else, it's going to be Mike Daniels. So, and he's also going to rotate in and out, I think. I've heard some people talk about he could be a guy you'd put as a middle blitzing kind of guy, or on pass downs, you could probably put him at the DN spot, take out a Dean Lowry and put in Rashawn Gary, and then have Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith out there as well. Just have him with his hand on the ground, which he's used to. And then just kind of, you know, move those sorts of things around. Is a guy who could come in and do various things because he's got a big body and a good motor, and he should be good at that. So that's basically what we've learned, is that he really wants freaks. And this is the other interesting thing. I think they said, and I'm looking at these now, the phrase that's come, or term, or whatever you want to call it, the stat or the measurable that people are going to use, the metric, is this RAS. All right. And if you're looking at the RAS, which is like the relative athletic score, it's basically a composite that they use now. Relative athletic score created by Kent Lee Platt. Basically, the Packers scored an 8.5 average in this class. That was the third highest in terms of athleticism, measurable athleticism, obviously, in the entire class. The Chargers were at 8.63 and the Saints at 8.61. And that's just the average. The Packers only had one player below an 8. And to be clear, 8 is the point that's considered to be an elite number. All right. So if anybody's looking at these numbers or looking these up, 8 is considered to be an elite athleticism. The only player who's below that is Jay Sternberger, which with that name, it sounds like you should have non-elite athleticism. So,
right. He sounds like he's going to be a white tight end. Wait.
Yeah.
There we go.
He was actually, and I'll tell you of the names through those first three rounds. I knew the names we're talking about. Jay Sternberger was the only one that I'd heard mentioned several times in relation to coming to the Packers. He was an interesting name. I like him as a tight end. He's got good hands. He doesn't have elite speed, but he's a 4.75, which is just right around what T.J. Hockenson runs. He was a 4.70, I believe, or 4.71. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, he's got good enough speed, and he's got good hands. What you need from him, I think, is what they're looking for, is a guy to be more all-around. He doesn't necessarily need to be a world beater, but he needs to be a guy who can get to the edges, get some of those dump-off plays. And, and he needs to be able to block in this scheme. So that's the one thing, too. I'm not exactly sure.
That was kind of a knock on him, is that his blocking can be shoddy. It can be good, but it can also be pretty shoddy. Like, sometimes he just doesn't block.
So. Yeah, I've heard he's a bit inconsistent. I've already seen some videos of him just kind of whiffing on some guys.
My favorite one is when he just watches his quarterback get crushed and then just doesn't help him up. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's
so,
like, oh, no.
If you haven't seen it, you will be seeing it because somebody's going to keep playing it for you.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the name you want for your tight end. We got Tanyan and Sternberger and a Mercedes. So,
I think it's funny that after day one, how demonized Brian Gutenkunst was and toxic Packer Twitter was at most toxic. Like, I mean, I was reading tweets that were saying, I hope this draft fails miserably. I hope this team tanks for 3 years so Brian Gutekunst gets fired. And I mean, I saw that more than 10 times. And it's like, what, A, what's wrong with you? And B, you know, it's starting to come to the point now, and it's starting to rear its ugly head, it's starting to rear its head a little bit more, that you see these GMs, you know, rather than making, I mean, granted the Packers did move up, they traded away both their fourth round picks to move up to get Savage, but they wanted to get their guy, you know. Yeah. And so rather than just waiting it out and trying to see if you're going to get your guy, you just go get your guy, you know. And probably after Ed Oliver left the board and maybe one other player in the top 10 that the Packers were tracking, you know, this guy might slip back to us, you know, depending upon the quarterback drafting. And boy, the Giants really tried to help out with pushing back people a little bit. But they probably had three big names on their board is how it worked out. You know, it's like one of these three people will be here. I listen to, I listen to KFan over in the Twin Cities. I promise I'll get off the Vikings here pretty quick. But they basically said that, you know, I listened to their GM, talk about their draft strategy. And he kind of led on to, like, we knew, you know, we needed linemen, but our philosophy has always been draft the best player available. However, at 18, we knew that we were going to have one of three linemen. We're still going to be there almost 90%. And it was probably the same way with the Packers. At 12, here's three players we could probably get. No kidding. And I'm just guessing Gary was one of them. So, and that's why that happened. And then they had identified a safety that they could get at 30 or maybe in the second round. And they're like, well, maybe let's just go get him, you know, because they've already kind of got it in their head. That's what they want. So rather than just gamble at what you're going to get, go get what you want with those first round picks. I guess, I don't know, overpay for them. And everybody's like, we're going to overpay for first round draft picks. First round draft picks don't get paid like they used to. We don't get the Matthew Stafford contracts anymore for the first overall pick. There's a structure there. You know, you're going to probably maybe pay more than what he's worth initially, but it's not going to break your bank.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, like the rest of the division didn't do so terribly in their picks this year. I like to see them look dumb, but they didn't seem to look too dumb this year. The Vikings went and got an offensive lineman in the first round, a decent good one. You know, like it's not a bad pick for what they got there. And, you know, I'd rather see them.
He's actually really good. He's a good center. I mean, he's the Remington Award winner, which means they have two Remington Award winners on their team now.
Yeah, and you know, one of them will play guard. They didn't screw it up, and you'd rather they screwed it up. I don't think they did terribly. The Bears didn't look bad for a team that didn't have a first, you know, because they basically paid their dues last year. They paid for last year's success by giving up the next couple years of growth by not getting other players. And yeah, they got a division championship.
We would have been just happy with not having a first round draft pick if Mac was on our team right now.
Yeah, I was definitely on board with trading one of these first picks for him. And yeah, it was definitely something you should have considered, I think. But yeah, like I said, you want to see your enemies fail, but they didn't. Right. They didn't look terrible.
The only reach I saw in the first round was Detroit taking Hockenson at 8, but that falls right into what I said. They wanted him, so they went and got him.
You mean in the division at least?
Yeah, that's what I meant. That was the other division team that was out there.
Because there were a couple other people there. The fact that Josh Allen survived till 7th is bewildering. Jones at 6 overall when he was going to be there later. I don't care what their general, what Gettleman tells you. I don't care. That's not at all correct. And Clelin Ferrell going 4th overall, just ridiculous. I don't know. Maybe he'll do something, but man, he would have been there later. That's the thing is the value.
He's going to be good though. Clemson linemen are going to be good though.
It's the value of the pick though. I think he's going to be a nice player, but. They had three first round picks. They could have gotten any of those later picks. They could have gotten somebody else here who was better. He's not going to be Josh Allen. Right? I mean, like Josh Allen's on the board. And you had Clelin Ferrell who was rated at being like he's probably the fourth best pass rusher or edge rusher in this draft. And he was going to be available later. You know, like he'd have been available in the 20s and they picked him 4th. So that was fun. That part was fun to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, no, those two, yeah. No, they definitely pushed some stuff back to the Packers. Sorry, it was, you know who it was that me and Andy were talking about last week? It was Devin Bush from Michigan that I was hoping would slip back to us and almost did, but not quite.
Not quite. And I would have been fine with that pick too. But yeah, he's an interesting Steeler. He could be an interesting Steeler going there. And they definitely have been good with picking their linebackers right ahead of the Packers. Because the last time they stole a linebacker, a pick or two ahead of the Packers, they traded ahead of us to go get Shazier.
Shazier, I was just going to say it was Shazier, right?
Yep, yeah. They jumped us to get him too, and I was really hoping to get Shazier, and that would have been an amazing change for this team. But yeah, it didn't happen that way.
What about Elton Jenkins from Mississippi State? I'm kind of happy about it.
I like the pick. Here's my overall take on the whole thing is, I never felt like it was a screwed up pick. Every single pick that happened, I was like, I get that. It was maybe not the person I wanted in my heart, but I could say at the same time, I was like, it's not the person I wanted. I'm not upset by it. I'm just not maybe super psyched about it. So I don't think that there's anything about this draft that you look at it, you say, Kadir Coleman, he's an interesting cat. He's a 4'3", 640, 5'11", 196 cornerback. We got an athletic running back out of Notre Dame in Dexter Williams. Ty Summers could be an interesting guy. He's a 241-pound linebacker, which, there's not a lot of those big linebackers left, but he had
Vontaze Burfict is about it. I mean, of just those big, beefy linebackers like that.
Yeah, Ty Summers out of TCU, he's got a 4.5 140, and he had a 9.7 RAS.
I mean, all these guys were burners too. Did you notice that? Like, I don't know, I didn't see Dexter Williams 40 time, and I don't have it right in front of me, but you're all freaks. You almost think that during Gutekunst's time as a scout, that he's the one that found JerMichael Finley. Like, seems like the kind of guy that he would draft. Maybe he's mad that the Packers didn't draft more JerMichael Finley's. I don't know.
Dexter Williams measured at a 4.5740, but
you watch him.
He can run. You watch he had the 97-yard touchdown run. It's like an off tackle to the left, and he takes that, and he's just out running safeties. I think he's one of those guys who's going to play a little faster than he looks like, but he's a good sized running back. He looks like the guys we got. In a lot of ways,
I mean, Terrell Davis from the, this isn't hyperbole. I'm not comparing him to Terrell Davis, but Terrell Davis was one of those guys that didn't have a fast 40 time, but he had that cutback. Running backs don't have to have the burner speed. Your outside guys have to have the burner speed.
Burner speed is great though. You'd like to have it, but yeah, these guys all had some good scores here. They're athletic players who are going to come in, and I think a lot of these guys are going to compete for a lot of different playing time. Maybe not Holman. Dexter Williams is probably going to be a guy who's going to sit third on this depth chart and maybe try to push for some time there. He's going to be these guys like Holman and Williams and Summers too. These guys are going to be pushing for getting those spots on the special teams. They've got good speed. And they can get down the field, and if they can play with physicality, then they're going to be very valuable that way. And if you're getting them in the sixth and seventh rounds, which is where those three players were all taken, then that's a great play for you.
The other thing that really stands out about this draft is there's nothing flashy about it at all. I mean, the first position player we took was Sternberger, and the only two position players we took were Sternberger and Williams. And it could be argued that tight end's really not a position player. It's a lineman that can catch a ball. So
overall, I thought the draft was nice. I don't think it's a world beater. People are giving us B-plus type grades, and that's probably about right. It was a good draft. They addressed needs. It's hard to rate too poorly when you have two first round picks. Uh-huh. It would be terrible if you did. In general, I think it's good, and it'll be interesting to see them all get in. Get them all on the field, and I'm looking forward to actually watching football again. And we're going to run out of the ability to talk Packers very soon here. So
hey, and John, one last thing on this draft I'm going to point out is that the Vikings picked a long snapper with one of their seventh round picks. So we don't have to take any BS from them going forward about taking a punter last year.
We took a punter and a long snapper last year, actually. So
that's right. We got a long snapper too. That's right, we did. But yeah, the funniest part is that one of the top local celebrity sports people they have on KFAN is Kevin McDermott, their long snapper. So that's not good.
You're right. Yeah, that's fine. I tell my son he should be a long snapper. They're not allowed to hit you. And all you do is throw a ball between your legs, and you can play forever. I was like, you should go do that. Go do that.
The only contact you have is blocking on punt returns.
Yeah, they legally can't hit you while you're snapping the ball. It's like,
blocking on punt returns. Coverage on punting. When you punt, you have to be on punt coverage. So
yeah, you notice that a lot of times the snapper is like one of the first guys down there on the punts that nobody catches. Because they get a free release, basically, and... Yeah. So there's nothing you have to worry about.
Even in high school when I long snapped, they didn't hit the long snapper. You just basically ran down the field. Same thing when you kicked on kickoffs. Nobody ever blocks the kicker on kickoffs, so you kick and then you sprint down the middle of the field.
Yeah. Anyways. we'll move on to our most exciting coverage yet is the Bucks, who let us down a little bit here, and it is causing massive panic in the state of Wisconsin. Heller was worked up about it a little bit. No one was more hyperbolic than Paul Pierce, who is ridiculous and trying to set himself up as the worst take in all of basketball, I think, after declaring that he had a much better career than Dwayne Wade. And it's like, what? No one else but you believes that. Then he declared that there's no way the Bucks can win this series. There's just no way.
He wasn't any good until Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett showed up, and Kevin Garnett could be argued as one of the top five forwards of all time in the NBA history.
Yeah, Kevin Garnett was the best player on that team. Just without doubt.
He was one of the best players of his generation.
Right. Like, crazy good.
Yes. Anyways.
Yeah, and he had Ray Allen, who was one of the best three-point shooters of all time. And right. Yeah, and they also had I can't think of his name. He's playing with the Lakers now. The point guard they had there, he got him young, and they had a nice
force. Rondo.
Rajon Rondo. Sorry.
Yeah, Rondo back when he was really good. Yeah.
When he didn't have to shoot. He's not a guy who likes to shoot either,
but he could drive and he could really pass.
And he doesn't like to shoot. Yeah, he still doesn't like to shoot, but yeah, he could really get a ball to a place where it needs to be, and he's a tough kind of player. It was, he really rounded that out as a fourth player on that team and made it a lot easier for the rest of them.
They were kind of the first team with four big stars, really. I mean, since the Lakers of the 80s or the Celtics of the 80s and 60s or whatever. But yeah, no, I mean, back when the Celtics won their one championship, that team was really good. So
yeah,
Paul Pierce.
The commercial on SportsCenter where they're trying to come up with a nickname with Scott Van Pelt.
Yeah.
And they're like, they got the Parquet Posse and all this. And then he's like, the Boston Three Party. I was like, oh, man, that's awesome. Obviously, he didn't write that, but somebody else did for it. But that was a great name. Everybody's freaking out because it was a 112-90 loss. And clearly, that means everything's over. Random Celtics fans showing up on Bucks Twitter, who I've never heard of, saying, hey, where are you all now? And I was like, I don't know who you are. Why are you just sticking your face in my name? It's
like, John, that's a Jason Tatum fan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were responding to that because that guy just showed up just trying to talk trash to people. I was like, I don't even know who you are, man. He didn't even have his real name up there. He's like,
well, John,
what a punk.
John, they took a page right out of the team from across town. They went Belichick on the bit, and they really shut down what the Bucks do best, and that is Giannis driving the lane and Bledsoe getting inside too, for that matter. They made them shoot. And Al Horford is a very good player. He is maybe the most underrated star in the entire NBA. Like he was really good last year in the playoffs too.
Yeah.
So he can really turn it on in the springtime. But this is exactly what we talked about last week. It's if everyone decides, because I said it happened a couple times in the regular season. I hope it doesn't happen in the playoffs. It probably won't, but I hope it doesn't. And it did. And that is everybody forgot how to shoot all at the same time.
They shot 34.8% from the field. That's not going to happen a second time. So everybody calm down. Just seriously, the amount of panic in this game is ridiculous.
And the Celtics are a professional team with a very good coach and some good talent. And except for a 15-0 run, which caught the Bucks up and gave them a momentary lead, I had a hard time watching it. I was really just planning on I by about midway through the fourth quarter, I was thinking about Game of Thrones.
So yeah, I mean, like if you look at it on the thing here, I was watching Game of Thrones anyhow. If you're looking at it on the timeline, the game flow, it's a close game up until about midway through the third, and then the Celtics kind of pull away there, and the Bucks just weren't shooting well. They just. Mm-hmm. Like you said, they have nights like this where they just have a stinker and they can't shoot. The Bucks haven't lost two in a row this year, right?
Right. They ended up losing two in a row. They ended up doing that a couple. It was about 50 games in before they lost two in a row, I think. And it was a real fluky one where it was like four away games. And then they lost a couple more like down the stretch when they were resting people and they were in cruise control with the top spot. But
I just see that the Bucks. I think Boone's going to make some adjustments. They're going to figure some things out, and they're just not going to shoot this badly again, 34.8%. And they're a very good defensive team. They're going to figure some things out. They're going to win the next game, and they got to take one of two in Boston, which they can absolutely do. They're the better team. They're the better team.
They are the better team, but you know what this also was too, John? It was very obvious. It was very, very obvious. This team has never been there before. Boston's been there before. Kyrie Irving's been to the finals. I mean, Horford's been there before. I mean, they were just there last year. You know, it's the whole Kansas City Royals winning it the second time they made it to the World Series, or no team just runs straight to the finals. Usually, you know, usually there's even the Packers. Think about the Packers, Aaron Rodgers Super Bowl. You know, the first they weren't good. Then they got knocked out by the Cardinals. And then they won the Super Bowl because, you have to keep building with your young team. This is still a young team. Everybody on it's young except for Pau Gasol, who's old enough to have born both of us. but, I mean, that's what it was, and it looked like it. And you could tell that they were getting – Brad Stevens is a legit coach. Brad Stevens is a great coach.
Yeah.
They threw down a game plan, and they shut him down. You could tell this team just got frustrated. And what was happening on offense they're a better defensive team than they are an offensive team. And they just weren't, you could tell it was what was happening on one end of the court was spilling onto the other end of the court. And you could just see the team getting defeated. Like they were just, I'm not going to say they gave up because they didn't give up, but you could just tell that there was a sense of, what the fruit. There we go, going on like this isn't supposed to be happening to us. And I think they got shell-shocked is what happened. And I think with a three-day rest and Coach Bood figuring things out, I think they'll get it turned around. But as long as, the Bucks fans cheer at Pfizer for them and just don't sit the whole game and be super quiet, that would probably help too.
Yeah, I just don't see them losing two in a row here. I don't see them losing two at home. I think they're going to win at home. I think they're going to win this in six or seven. I still think that. I think this is one game, and it's the only thing we have in this round, and we all remember last round, like last year, losing the first round to the Celtics team that played a great playoff. But I still just don't. I don't think that this Celtics team is better than the Bucks, and I think the Bucks will win out in a seven-game series. I think the better team wins more often than not, and the Bucks are the better team. I think that in the long run, over this series, and this team has too many good leaders to allow that game to spill over into the next game. They're just, and I think they're going to figure this out. And like I said, they got good coaching too. It isn't the only team being coached over there in Boston. They're both getting coached well, and they're going to come back and they're going to figure this out.
Who was the coach at the end of last year? I don't even remember because Kidd was already fired.
I don't remember.
It was the interim coach. I can't even remember his name. That's bad.
I don't really care. We'll move on. We've got one Bucks game there to talk about, but we do have several Brewers games here. This was also a moment of panic in Milwaukee. And the Brewers, it's been a rough start to the season. Just the schedule they've had is crazy. But they just had a road series in St. Louis, and they lost all three. Man, they could have pulled out the last two. The first one, they got just hammered on that one. 13-5 loss. They were in it the next two, and then they came back, beat on Friday, they beat the Mets 10-2, and then 8-6, and then they lost 5-2 yesterday. But they did beat Colorado back at home today 5-1. Biggest story of this one is Jesus Aguilar, two home runs in the game. And it's nice to see zombie Jesus Aguilar coming back, and we believe in Jesus. And hopefully this is something to just kick him in. Sometimes there's just that mental block of getting to that first home run, I think.
Well, so, I mean, and good too, because he was about to get benched. Like it was kind of a thing because the Brewers had their first game off on Thursday in forever. I mean, it, granted they had to fly from St. Louis to New York, but it was kind of that we're going to get through the road games here, and then the Brewers are home a whole bunch of the home games here right in a row. They're in a little bit of a homestand, I think, if I'm correct. Yeah,
yeah. They get Colorado for three. No, probably four. They get four against Colorado, then they'll get three more against the Mets. I'm not good with numbers today. So four against Colorado, three against the Mets, and three against the Nationals. That's so, a pretty good homestand. You should win almost all of those.
10 game homestand, and I think they still don't get a day off. But anyways.
They'll get a day off on May 9th.
Yeah, eventually they'll get a day off, but at least they're home now. But that was kind of the talk was after they get back home from New York and they're on this homestand, there was even talk about Jesus Aguilar maybe being optioned down to AAA because that's a thing now, and I actually completely agree with it. It used to be a big thing to send your star down to the minors. You don't do that. You're going to crush your confidence. The Twins did it with Sano last year, and a couple other teams have done it. You send them down there to work on their mechanics and get their heads straight and get them out of the limelight for a little while so they can concentrate on what they're doing. But that was what they were talking about with Jesus. And, of course, Thames was knocking the stitches out of the ball for a little while there, which he should be because he looks like a pro wrestler. Yeah. But, no, I'm happy. I think I want Jesus Aguilar. I want everybody on this team to do well, but I want him to do well too. You know, I understand we have a second option at first base in Thames, but I'd rather have Jesus Aguilar do well. Like I don't know why. I just like his swing better. I think, I don't know, they're both great characters. It's just the way Jesus Aguilar took over that position last year after Thames was really kind of missing in the clutch a lot, wasn't, you know, he lost his position to Aguilar, and I don't want him to lose it back to Thames because he can't maintain, basically. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah, I like Jesus Aguilar, and I think he's been very good there. He's got a good approach to the plate, and he's got good patience. The number of home runs he hit in a two-strike count last year was great. And my one concern all offseason is of like, man, it seemed like he didn't come up from somewhere. Like he didn't build into that. We weren't expecting it. You just worried, can he do it a second time? Mm-hmm. We don't need him to do exactly that. We just need him to be able to play and put some runs on the board and just hit well. And he has not been hitting well. Right. And he finally got a couple home runs. Sometimes that's all you need to get that confidence back. He knows he can hit these guys. He's already played these guys for a full year. He put up good numbers all year. He had a decent playoff. I think he's going to be fine in the long run. I just don't think he's going to be the guy we thought we had last year. So I don't know. It's just,
well, that wasn't, and let me get this straight too. That wasn't a shot at Thames. If Thames goes out and hits 275 with 30 home runs and 80 RBIs, great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like I the way he took that position over last year, and there was no question about it. I'll take that. And also too, and everybody was panicking. The Brewers right now, after winning tonight, are back above 500. Granted, they're only 15-14, so they're only one game up. But at the same time, let's stop and think about this for a second. How many times have we played the Dodgers and the Cardinals already this year?
Yeah, it's been a crazy number.
Maybe 1A, 1B, and 1C with the Brewers' best teams in the National League.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had several series against each already, and we actually held our own against those guys. Like, we didn't get blown out by a lot of those games, and we were in a lot of them, and we won a good chunk of those. I mean, we still got a winning record.
We played 500 with them.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, we did. And those are playoff-style teams. Those are teams people were picking to win their divisions this year, and we played right with them. The Brewers aren't bad, and you're like, oh, Yelich is just carrying everybody. You're like, everybody else is catching up. They're getting better. The Twitter, Wisco Disco Twitter there, he's had some nice takes. I follow him. I think he's interesting and fun, whatever his actual name is. But he does have some takes where he gets really on stuff, and then people are like, man. But then at the same time, though, he comes out the other side and is like, hey, calm down, it's April. And at the same time, he'll be like, we need to get rid of Aguilar. We need to get rid of Arcia. We also need this entire everybody in the bullpen is just trash. It's trash. I was like, it's April or they're trash. I'm like, which one are you going to go with, man?
Sometimes I wonder. Now, I am not immune to posting things on Twitter after a couple drinks, but I start to think that Wisco Disco might be like our favorite Clue Haywood that are actually at a bar posting while watching these things. So,
yeah, that's fun. One thing based on
the way he picks fights, Wisco Disco picks fights with people sometimes. It's bad. It's fun.
It's been like interesting.
But I mean, in the national, so like back to the point at hand, though, the Brewers right now are 16 and 14 with the win tonight. That would make them one game behind in the East, and they have as many wins as the Phillies because the Phillies are 16 and 12. So I mean, in the East, the Brewers are at the top. You know, they're in second behind the Dodgers in the West. The Dodgers are 19 and 11, and the Cardinals are 18 and 10. So by percentage alone, the Cubs are ahead of the Brewers, but they're in a virtual tie. Because the Brewers don't have rainouts like everybody else, because they put a roof on their stadium because it's the Midwest, people, and it's early spring. They're doing fine, and the NL Central is probably the best division. I don't know; it's too early to tell. The AL East is always up there, minus Baltimore, but. I mean, I am not concerned. What I'm more concerned about is with Yelich hurting himself yesterday. That was kind of scary because anytime anybody instantly leaves a game for any reason, that's usually not good. So
yeah, not a fan of how that worked, but it's hopefully he's okay. They said it was back tightness. It's not like pro football where they have to be pretty specific, you know, because of the gambling. They're more vague about how it all goes, and I guess we'll have to kind of keep an eye on that because it's definitely something to worry about.
It's not hockey where the injury report. Yeah, the lower half of their body is hurt.
it's a lower body injury there.
It's an upper body injury.
Oh, he's got an injury to his upper body.
No, his carotid artery was in fact severed by a skate. But yes, it's an upper body injury.
They don't let you do that in football.
You just got to imagine, kind of like golfers too, you know, he's a skinny dude with a ton of power. I mean, they lift way more than they ever used to. You know, how many of these young golfers now have back problems? Tiger took him 3 years to get around his back problem, and he's a freak of nature. So, I mean, I can only imagine this dude's got a good hard swing. I'm guessing he's probably prone to back spasms or something like that anyways. And Council even said he was running the bases and his foot caught or something and his back stuck. And he's like, we took him out of the game. So being someone who has back spasms, like it can, when they fire up, they fire up. And you can't do anything. So I hope for his sake that's what it is, because that's stuff that you can control. So,
yeah. Yeah. The one thing I also wanted to talk about with the Brewers is nobody wants to talk about this, but everybody was talking about getting rid of Arcia and how terrible he is. He's batting .232 now, right? Like we said a couple weeks ago, I said, it's like, if he's batting .220, I'll be happy, especially with his glove. Batting .232. Right. He's not hitting terrible. And considering how badly he started off this season, worked his way back up to .232. But nobody's going to talk about how he's been hitting well this week. So,
and considering how well he played in the playoffs last year, if he wants to be one of those playoff players that plays an okay game all season long, then lights it up in the postseason, keep him around for that, if nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was nice to see him getting some things done there, but that's...
Get rid of him for what? He bats eight. In the National League, which is equivalent to batting ninth.
Yeah,
he's a great fielder. You can't have everybody hitting well. It's been like that forever. Your best fielder in the infield is rarely your best hitter. And those ones that are your best hitter are all in the Hall of Fame.
So that's really all we have in terms of the major Wisconsin sports and at least our takes on how things are going. Like we said, Brewers got a nice stretch coming up here. They're going to have some more games. They got Colorado and then Mets and then Nats. And then they'll go back on the road for a little bit. But by then, hopefully we're feeling a little bit better about where we all are at this point. We'll move on to just a couple little things here in the tail to just talk about quickly. And so here comes the tail.
Now it's time for the tail, covering Wisconsin's other sporting news.
The only couple of things to talk about here is Wisconsin track had the Penn Relays, which is a big event. It's been going on since 1895. Huge, huge event. It's 125th Penn Relays. Badgers took home two of the relays this weekend. I'm trying to see which two of these were here, but they did take home a couple of relay championships. So men's track team looking very good this weekend. This next one that they'll have, they have the Alumni Classic at Wisconsin, May 3rd. And then the conference championship will be May 10th, already for outdoor track. And so, yeah, we'll look forward to what we can hear from the track and field going forward. That should be interesting. The only big things, too, is that this weekend, if everybody remembers back to when the Badgers were still playing hockey, men's hockey at least, they played against that 18U team, the men's 18U team, and they beat the Badgers. By the way, they also beat UMD.
Who won the national championship, everybody. That's right.
This team, by the way, has three future Badgers on it. And they looked really good. They ended up losing to Russia, who I think was the eventual champion in the International Ice Hockey Federation Junior Championships. And then they beat Canada in the bronze medal game. So Canada goes medalless in the Junior Championships, which is at least somewhat fun for us because they're our neighbors. And that's a great rivalry between the United States and Canada in hockey. And it's nice when we win one or two. It would have been nicer to play in the gold medal game, but watching Canada not get a medal is also interesting. And they're probably all losing their minds right now in Canada. But a great weekend for Badger players who are there, or future Badger players who are there, and looking forward to having them all playing in the Cardinal and White next year for that. Oh, and the one other thing I did forget to mention in terms of the Penn Relays. Penn Relays was the debut of a sprinter for the UW track team. Maybe you know him.
I'm looking that up, but that's why I was being so quiet. I was looking that up. That was mine, John.
Who was it, Aaron? Who was it who made his
debut? It was Jonathan Taylor.
He's an interesting young man, yeah.
Yeah, he was competing in the 400-meter relay.
Yeah, and so if nobody's – that's the 4x1, you mean, right?
I believe so, yeah. The 4x1, yes. Not the 4x4, but the 4x1, yes.
Yeah, just so everybody's clear, we don't mean a 4x400. It's the 400-meter relay, which is four runners, each running 100, roughly. So great to see. He's working on his speed even more for a guy who has great breakaway speed. Real track runners. We've had several Badger running backs also be great track runners. Michael Bennett, of course, was a Big Ten sprinting, I believe, all Big Ten sprinter.
He was really good in high school, too. He won everything at Wisconsin track and field. It was ridiculous.
And if you ever watched, any Badger game, they will always show you that 100-meter final, the New Jersey State Championship 100-meter final, where Jonathan Taylor beats everybody by 10 meters. It's a ridiculous video to watch, anybody being that much faster than the other eight fastest guys in your state. So, good to watch. It's good fun.
He's really fast. I want to say, who's the other? So Michael Bennett was really fast. Who's the other running back that played for Wisconsin that was super fast?
Well, Gordon was crazy fast.
Gordon, that was the other one. He was also a big track guy too.
Yeah. So. He was crazy fast. He was a lot of fun to watch too. Other than that, though, that we'll get everything else out and talk our last couple of thoughts here in our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
Aaron, what did you have this week? You wanted to kind of throw in last seconds.
Well, I don't know, John. Now I'm trying to figure out how they did at the Penn Relays in the 4x100 because I forgot you were going to bring that up. Let's see here. This week, I was going to bring up more so than anything else. So last night, while Game of Thrones was going on, I was on Twitter, and I was, I've never gotten into, you know, there's various sections of Twitter, and, you know, like whether it's Packers Twitter or Brewers Twitter or Bucks Twitter, and, you know, depending upon what your interests are, you know, you can fall into. And so, like, I was watching Game of Thrones Twitter last night, and it's a very entertaining, smart community, and I was thinking about it as compared to what I was watching on Thursday night on Twitter when the Packers were drafting. And it made me almost quit Twitter again, because I was literally just typing at people, what is wrong with you? Stop typing things and posting this, because which it's, you're just posting pure garbage. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, I don't know. And the other, so the whole thing is, I guess, you know, like I'm almost like Twitter police. Like I almost go out there and like look for people posting dumb things, and just, and same thing with Brewers Twitter and Bucks Twitter. Like the Twitter in the state, I don't know, it maybe goes hand in hand with people not standing up at sporting events, because that was one of the big takeaways from the Bucks game yesterday, is that no one stands up. As a matter of fact, if you stand up to cheer during the most intense moments of the game, people tell you to sit down because they can't see the game. So I don't know. That's just whatever. I've been really mad at Wisconsin fans this last week, and I might have even put something online about, now I see why the Vikings fans don't like us. I don't know. It was a bad week it was a bad showing for Packers and Brewers and Bucks fans on Twitter this last week. So get it together, people.
It is an odd world to live in, Twitter at times, because it seems like the entire thing of Twitter, and I'm just going to follow off on yours here because I don't have a whole lot of else for big moments other than the draft we already talked about. The Twitter world seems to be like, obviously you're trying to get as many people to read your thing or to like it or to respond to it or to, you know, get out there. And the easiest way to do that is to say something horrible and mean and to just be mean about things all the time. And that just seems to be part of the medium at this point, which is unfortunate. I don't think you or I try to be particularly mean to anybody when we're out there in the Twitter world. We're just trying to say things about sports and trying to sometimes make dad jokes or just be weird about it. Just something funny or quippy or something like that. But yeah, it's the takes that went on here. And I'll tell you, for one thing, like watching like Cheesehead TV, following those guys and the things that are being said to like Aaron Nangler or sometimes our friend Andy Herman or Corey Banky or some of those guys, you're just throwing stuff out there. And then when they respond, you're like, oh, I can't believe you said that. You're like, man, you just called a whole bunch of things dumb, or this is just this and that. You can't get all mad when people call you out when you're just calling entire articles stupid. And people are like, that's a stupid take. You're like, I can't believe you said that to me. You're like, you're that guy. Yeah. you know, so... Yeah, the big thing is, I mean, especially with things like the draft and these, you know, they're kids yet, you know, they're like 21, 22 for a lot of these kids. Right. And, you know, they're just super excited. I don't like being all mad or pointing it on the kids. It is hilarious at times now to watch some of these things in the draft. And the one thing I'll say that is always interesting to me is now the several teams in which they just hired TV people to be their general managers. And in some cases, right, just to be toadies to their coaches. And I'm thinking about John Lynch, who is the most overrated safety in the history of history. Because the chances that every year he gets put up as some finalist for the Hall of Fame over Leroy Butler, who is 10 times the player that John Lynch was. John Lynch, yeah, was the guy you threw at in that defense, because Tampa Bay's defense was stacked.
So good.
There were guys everywhere. They were blitzing off the edge. They had the best defensive tackle in football. They had the best linebacker in football. They had Rondae Barber. And
they won with Brad Johnson.
And then they had John Lynch, who was like, yeah, he hit. He was like he was Chuck Cecil 2.0. And then he went and he's good on TV.
Chuck Cecil with a better fitting helmet.
True. He could tackle and he could hit big. But he wasn't a good cover guy. You threw at John Lynch because he was going to miss a play and you were going to beat him. He wasn't that much faster. He wasn't a great player. And I hate the idea that he's always up for the Hall of Fame. But anyhow, I digress slightly.
The Hall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame, I think, right?
Did he? I didn't see that he actually got in. I always think he loses and I get mad. I get mad that he's a finalist ever. Because Leroy Butler, again, way better. Better at him at every single aspect of football. He was the all 90s safety on the all 90s team. And it's like, just stop it. It's stupid to make the argument against him. He should be there yesterday. Anyhow, now we've got him. He was on TV for a little bit, so that means he's qualified to be a general manager. By the way, to become general manager, he asked the head coach if he could be his general manager before going to the team. It's ridiculous how backwards football is kind of coming. There's no place for these sorts of big general managers against the head coaches that they're getting now, because they really want that young wunderkind. Everybody's looking for McVay. They got Shanahan out in San Francisco, and then you know John Lynch asked if he could be his GM. What's he even doing out there? And the only thing he's done that I thought was great was he made the trade to go get the quarterback rather than going out and waiting on it. They went out and got Garoppolo rather than waiting for Kirk Cousins, who they were going to get, we thought. And that changed everything. But then they just ended up trying to move quickly. And that's the only one he's had that I think was great. He's kind of middling otherwise, I think, in terms of his actual ability. But I don't think he's really making the picks. I think his head coach is making all those picks. I think he's just there.
Sycophant? Is that the right word for
yeah,
that?
Yeah, probably. He's trying to stick himself into a winning team and just try to be part of something again like that, I think.
I'm just saying that like he'd be the sycophant for Shanahan then, because basically he's just doing whatever he wants. Okay, yeah, that's right. I did use that word correctly. Nice. Yeah. Hey, but some teams are trying to get the wunderkind with the TV guy running the squad, and then other places are getting John Gruden and then taking Mike Mayock.
Mike Mayock was the next name I was going to go after. Yeah, Mike Mayock coming in with the Raiders and then reaching on Clelin Ferrell, who would have been available later, and just left some gaping holes on that team. And
do you think that he tells Gruden what to do ever?
I don't know. I don't know, because I think Mayock's a guy who definitely has opinions. He's a guy who put himself. Both those guys. The one thing you'll say from him is. And you give him a world of credit for this, and this is why people get all mad at Mel Kiper. But I love Mel Kiper for this reason. He puts all of his opinions right out in front of you. He's not hiding it. He's not couching it. He gives you every reason he does it. And he doesn't hit every one of them. And he's had some glaring misses. But you know what? Every GM has.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I've never minded about Mel Kiper is he puts himself out there, like you said, and he's unapologetic. Like, he doesn't care. He's like, I get paid to do this. You know, I put a ton of time and research into this. You know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. You're still watching me. You know, I love Mel Kiper.
I think he's great. And I the people who spend their time going after him, I'm just like, just come on, man. Like, if I put everything that I do at work that publicly, I would be, you'd be wrong a lot, because we all are. But he goes on TV and radio with every one of the things that he does with his job and waits for just every kid, you know, with a Twitter account to start yelling at him. He never responds to him, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Good for him on that. But, yeah, he also knows he's not going to be a GM because he doesn't want to be. But he just does all the evaluating himself. He just sits there and watches everybody. He doesn't have notes. He doesn't have notes up there. He just knows these things. Mayock, I thought, was an odd pick to become a general manager. He not only has he never, you know, like never been a general manager, obviously he's worked in TV, but he didn't work in a scouting department somewhere. I would rather pick Andrew Brandt to be my general manager than picking Mike Mayock. Andrew Brandt, by the way, brilliant on Twitter and brilliant when he does his ESPN stand-ins and all that stuff. That guy was an agent and also worked for the Packers in personnel. He's one of the guys who's worked on several different contracts with the Packers. I think he was there when they drafted. I can't remember. I think he was there when they drafted Rodgers yet. But yeah, he's, you know, it's like he knows a ton of what's going on in these things, and he would be brilliant in that position. Nobody's talking to him, but they talked to Mike Mayock, who called Thursday night football games. So, well, I don't know. It's a weird trend that bears watching in that regard. Football is one of the weird spots in terms of economics. If you looked at economics and the study of decision-making is what economics is. It's not always money. It's a weird position where you are specifically basically telling guys to not take long-term approaches with your team, because if you don't win tomorrow, they're going to fire you. But it's guaranteeing that you're telling them that you're going to fire them quickly, that you're going to make sure that you fire them before their players have a chance to develop, and also that you can't have a long-range plan. You can't pick that guy to say, like, we need to keep this guy on the back of the roster, and it's going to hurt us this year, but in five years, we're going to have this team, or we've got this plan to build this line, or we're going to do this and this and this. Because really what would be the smartest thing to do is draft O-line. Just go big on O-line, go big and hard on O-line, and then draft your quarterback, which is actually what Dorsey did with the Raiders before they fired him, was build a very good offensive line, then draft his quarterback, Carr, who then had an MVP season before he got hurt. And now a bunch of the linemen are kind of moving on, and they've fired a bunch of people and destroyed the defense he built. So,
hey, John, I promise I'll keep this one short. I know we're running up against the clock. But I swear to God to it, and if I hear this anymore, it's, well, what the best teams do, there is only one best team, and nobody else does it like them. The Patriots are the only team that does it like the way they do. And yet everyone's like, well, the best teams draft. Who are the other best teams?
I don't know. Who
else is on a winning streak right now? Who else has a ton of Super Bowls? Like, why doesn't everybody do it just like the Patriots? Why doesn't anybody say that?
What the Patriots do is, first and foremost, they don't care that you have a drinking problem, that you have a drug problem, that you've ever hit a police officer with your car. They just want to know if you can play.
And they'll sounds like Florida in the SEC.
Yeah, and they'll kick the tires on anybody. They will sign a one-year contract with anybody because they'll take a look. So, yeah, they're always interesting that way because they'll try to find a way for somebody, you know, a Demaryius Thomas.
And Belichick. That's the last sentence on that one.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us again for another week. Sorry it's been sleep-deprived and everything. So we'll come back next week. Yeah. Come back next week. A lot less Packers to talk about, possibly. We'll see. We've been talking with some other people to see if we can get some other follow-up thoughts on it, if we have anything going forward. Maybe we'll take a look at as they fill in all the undrafted free agents. They've been picking up a couple and making some other roster moves. We're just not going to get into that today. Thank you again. Remember to follow the show at ScannyJohnny1. You can follow me at JBarn54, and you can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. Again, you can email the show at podcast@ScannyJohnny.com or visit our website, www.ScannyJohnny.com. And remember that whether you are on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
We should really get drunk David Stearns for next week.
This has been the Scanny Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScannyJohnny1 or online at ScannyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening.